CliffCentral.com.
The chain smokers break up every night. CliffCentral.com, Wednesday morning, the 24th of May. What's happening? Well, there's a lot happening, actually, as it turns out. Sia just told me that the Obamas are in Italy living this incredible post-presidential life. I was saying it's got to be the best job in the world is not being president, as Donald Trump is learning, because he keeps bitching about how his previous life was so much better.
Yes, he does.
And it was. I don't know why this idiot wanted to be president so badly, but now he's got it. He's like a dog that chases a car. What are you going to do when you catch it?
he was craving the power of it all. That's all.
Well,
my goodness, what if he runs for second term?
He might, but I doubt. Listen, I don't know what's going on there. The guy, Obama, look at Obama's life right now. Can we? Where is he? What are Michelle and Barack doing right now?
Totally sightseeing in Italy. Mm. This is like vacation.com, which is what their life is all about. But there's actually now details that are emerging about their lives currently. So they've downsized, obviously. No. They now only have a staff of 20 people. Only 20. working for them in an office at the west end of Washington, D.C. So both the Obamas are busy writing books. They have these multi-million dollar deals signed.
Oh, nice.
And they're planning the Obama Presidential Center in Chicago's South Side. So that's what they're currently working on, President Obama.
But there's no pressure.
No.
Not like when you're president.
Things. It's like just opening a presidential center. What's that? It's a fun little thing.
And it's not like he has to pay for it either. He'll find people to sponsor that easily.
Oh, absolutely.
And all then his billionaire friends.
President Obama is expected to help support Democrats during the midterm elections in 2018. So he can still vacation for the rest of this year.
Right.
And Mrs. Obama actually now has gotten into Soul Cycle, which is like the cycling fitness classes where it's all zened out and you listen to music and you meditate in there. So look at that. It's not vacationing, it's soul cycling, it's living the life.
But shouldn't they?
Absolutely.
This is the most stressful job in the universe. Okay, there's not a lot that gets more difficult than being president. You saw how quickly they all go gray, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So you've been president of the United States. You don't need to prove anything to anyone anymore. You've been at the top of your game. Now it's time for you to chill. Mm. Time for you to relax a little bit, enjoy your life. And you've got all the perks of being president because people have a lot of respect for him. They have a lot of time for him, right?
Oh, yeah. So what?
And he's got a security detail for the rest of his life. He gets called Mr. President. He doesn't lose a thing. He gains his life back. He can be with his daughters a little bit. He can spend time with his wife. Clearly, they have a good relationship.
Yeah.
And you get regaled everywhere you go in the world because to some people, he was the last great U.S. president.
Shucks. Mrs. Obama, was something else she's also enjoying?
Yes.
Packing her own lunch to go to the office.
Because she never used to do that.
Come on. Mr. Obama still doesn't know how to use the coffee maker, but he's trying to learn that.
Yes, of course.
And they still do meet with the Bidens, but it actually is on the golf course when Mr. Obama and Mr. Biden play golf together.
They still BFFs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
I mean, that relationship is solid.
There's no lie.
Those two can't help. They're so in love.
Oh my gosh.
It's a real bromance. And I think that Joe Biden is more in love than what Obama is.
Oh, sure.
When you're the clingier one in the relationship, is that it?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's got to be fantastic to have been president and now you're not anymore.
Mm. Mm.
And especially when someone worse comes
in. I don't understand this president of ours and Vladimir Putin and all of these people. I mean, Vlad could retire now. Some people say he's the richest man in the world. A lot of his wealth is undeclared, but he's a trillionaire. He's the world's first trillionaire. He's skimming some profits off of oil and industry and mining and everything in Russia.
Oh my goodness.
And he could retire now and live a great life, have parties. He's got this huge house. Look at Vladimir Putin's house. It's on the Black Sea. Your eyes will pop out of your head.
Excuse me?
Look at that house.
It's called Putin's Palace.
Yes.
What?
Now why this guy insists on hanging on to power. You know, the longer you stay in office, the more dangerous it becomes. People, there are assassination attempts. There are coup attempts. You have to keep on fighting. Look at our president. He's now fighting for his life against his own party and people in his own party. You can't tell me that that still turns you on. Go and enjoy your life. Enjoy your money.
Yeah, but do you think you can, though, Gareth? Because you've accumulated such wealth and power, right? The only way to stay there is obviously keeping it. Okay. Because if he goes away and is just rich, he'll be under someone else's control.
Let's just draw a distinction between people who have stolen and lied on a massive scale and the people who might have done one or two favors. I mean, I'm not saying any president is completely squeaky clean. There are going to be decisions you make which may be viewed by people against you or people for you as being cloudy, put it that way. But if you were – look at David Cameron. Okay, this guy, he can now do whatever he wants. Mm. He's former prime minister. Look at Barack Obama, former president. Look at Bill Clinton. If his wife weren't so ambitious, he'd be having – the best time now. Of course, they're in the doldrums because Hillary's completely screwed up the legacy. But that's a different story. I mean, Bill might be blamed for that as well. The fact is, once you've done it, then you really get to savor existing on this planet in a realm that nobody else can ever compete with. Like, you could have the richest friend in the world. You could be best mates with Bill Gates. Bill Gates is still going to be number two on every party list if you're available. Mm. You get what I mean? There's no celebrity in the world right now that can compete with Barack Obama. And he doesn't have a job. What a life.
You see, but also someone who's on that train of thought, and, you know, it's Oprah. I hate to bring this analogy.
Yeah, she's retired as well.
Look at her now.
She doesn't have to do anything. She's going around. She's involved in the project she cares about. She's flying from school opening and graduation to graduation.
Oh, my goodness.
She's doing the stuff that turns her on. She's earned the right.
Planting vegetables.
She's earned the right to do whatever the hell she wants. That is pure freedom. That is the stuff that you and I and everyone else we dream about. And these very, very rarefied individuals, they're able to enjoy that.
But
that's why I get annoyed when they still complain about something.
Who's complaining?
No, I'm just... what was it that Oprah once said about the difficulties of being wealthy or some other nonsense like that? You see, this is why I get annoyed when people like that still find reasons to complain, because in my mind I'm thinking... Okay, but really now?
Okay, let's take an example. I mean, she's in her world, that's a legitimate complaint.
Mm.
You don't have to second guess your friends and why they're your friends. Oprah has to wonder, is this person really interested in me? Is this person really someone I can rely on? Is this person after something? Every time she meets someone. And they're all asking for something, trust me.
Yes, but that's what it is. Now deal with it.
Sure. But that's the same challenge to her as you and I have challenges with our bank balance.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
She prioritizes.
You
know what I mean?
That's a struggle.
I know. It's hard being sympathetic to someone like that. It's just like, oh, man.
It's fascinating to watch. I mean, like these Obamas, what a great life. Don't tell me there's been a human being post-presidency who's having a better time right now. He's smiling every day. I reckon his dick has grown by like 5 inches. His skin is cleared. His hair is starting to go dark again. The guy just feels invigorated.
But you know, it's to all the dream chasers who are like me.
5 inches. Oh.
This also doesn't take away from the fact that to get to that point, you actually have to put in work.
Oh, and you have to
achieve. They worked their butts off.
You're not going
to
just
now enjoy this.
You're not just going to get there by being a slacker at the back of the queue. All right. Let me tell you quickly about something very important that you need to know. Headphones. Who cares about headphones? We're all wearing them now, but that's because it's part of our job. Do you wear headphones during the day?
Yeah.
Yes.
Always.
Yeah. When do you wear them?
When you're on the how train, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When Sia's sitting next to you.
I mean, some people go jogging with earphones.
That's right. I've seen them. Well, if you need some fine-tuned acoustics for ultimate clarity and depth to your favorite tracks, plus the ability to take calls and control music with a remote talk cable, iStore has got you covered for this and so much more with the hashtag Beats Life Bundle. What is that? Well, I'll tell you. For just $1,999, you can get the Beats EP Black Headphones plus a 200 Rand iStore voucher plus entry into the draw for other great Apple products like the iPhone 7 and the Apple Watch Series 2. Head on to cliffcentral.com right now. Find a little button on the top right called Shop, and you will see these products available to you there. If it's time for an upgrade, then this may be the sign from the universe that you've been waiting for. Click on the shop link to make it happen at cliffcentral.com. It's an exclusive offer just to you because you listen to us. $1,999 for the Beats EP Black Headphones, and we'll throw in a 200 Rand iStore voucher for free and put you into the draw for other great Apple products. Go on to cliffcentral.com, click on shop. You'll thank me in the morning. All right. Roger Moore died.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, huh?
I saw this news last night. Now, a lot of people don't know. I suppose a lot of people wouldn't care much about Roger Moore, but he was James Bond when I first started watching James Bond.
Yeah, like he was our generation's James Bond. You know, because Sean Connery is obviously a little bit old.
Sure. And this guy was, he was a, I mean, he was so suave. He was everything that an English James Bond needed to be, right?
Yeah, he really was. He was in Bond 7 times, Gareth. And he was quite long in the tooth towards the end, which made it look a bit creepy. But he was just good. He had some great one-liners. And he did. He epitomized like the 80s, okay? So he was the 80s Bond. He had the cool cars. Of course, one of the biggest things.
Yes, my name is Bond. James Bond. I'm looking for Dr. Goodhead.
You just found her.
A woman.
A woman.
Sorry, was that Dr. Goodhead?
Yes, yeah.
Dr. Okay. Goodhead. Yeah.
So, I know you only think of me as a hard party mode queen, but for your information, I spent 32 years in the armed forces, serving Her Majesty, the real queen. I've seen action in 5 different theaters of war. I've made over 490 drops, 23 over hostile territory. I am what you colonials might call a bad-assed motherfucker, who also happens to be an expert in the delicate art of Japanese flower arranging.
What role was he playing there?
He was so much more than a Bond as well. He did so many different roles. He actually played an overtly large queen in a really terrible movie, which I just prepared you a clip of.
Yeah.
The movie tanked, but everyone thought he was amazing, and he was. He was like a real character. He was a real humanitarian, and he was 90, which was a pretty good innings.
Well, I've got a lovely story about him. I saw this yesterday on the internet, and I thought I'd just read it to you. All right, so try to, if you've never ever heard of Roger Moore before, you can picture him as James Bond. So someone wrote this up as a tribute to him. As a 7-year-old in 1983, in the days before first-class lounges at airports, I was with my grandfather at Nice Airport, and I saw Roger Moore sitting at the departure gate, reading a newspaper. I told my granddad that I'd just seen James Bond, and asked if we could go over and get his autograph. My granddad had no idea who James Bond or Roger Moore was, so we walked over, and he popped me in front of Roger Moore with the words, "My grandson says you're famous, can you sign this?" As charming as you'd expect, Roger asked my name and signed the back of my plane ticket a fulsome note of best wishes. I'm ecstatic, but as we head back to our seats, I glance down at the signature. It's hard to decipher, but it definitely doesn't say James Bond. My grandfather looks at it, half figures out that it says Roger Moore. I have absolutely no idea who that is, and my heart sinks. I say to my granddad, "He signed it wrong. He's put someone else's name." So my grandfather heads back to Roger Moore, holding the ticket that he's just signed. I remember staying in our seats and my granddad saying, "He says you've signed the wrong name. He says your name is James Bond." Roger Moore's face crinkled up with realization and he beckoned me over. When I was right next to him, he leant over, looked from side to side, raised an eyebrow and in a hushed voice said to me, "I have to sign my name as Roger Moore because otherwise Blofeld might find out I was here." He asked me not to tell anyone that I'd just seen James Bond, and he thanked me for keeping his secret. I went back to our seats, my nerves absolutely jingling with delight. My granddad asked me if he'd signed James Bond. "No," I said. "I got it wrong. I was working with James Bond now." Many, many years later, I was working as a scriptwriter on a recording that involved UNICEF. and Roger Moore was doing a piece to camera as an ambassador. He was completely fantastic, and while the cameraman was setting up, I told him in passing the story of when I met him at Nice Airport. He was really happy to hear it, and he had a chuckle and said, "Well, I don't remember, but I'm glad you got to meet James Bond." So that was lovely. And then he did something brilliant. After the filming, he walked past me in the corridor, heading out to his car. But as he got level, he paused, looked both ways, raised an eyebrow, and in a hushed voice said, "Of course I remember our meeting in Nice, but I didn't say anything in here or in there because of those cameramen. Any one of them could be working for Blofeld." I was as delighted at 30 years old as I had been at 7. What a man. What a tremendous man.
There's so many stories like that of him. He was just one of those really great guys.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And obviously he lost the battle with cancer in his last sort of 20 years. You know, he was fighting various things, but his stepdaughter was also dying of cancer, and he literally moved in with her to comfort her in her last few months of living.
Wow.
And sadly, she passed away, and then he succumbed to it as well.
Mm. Anyway, so I just thought it would be worth paying a tribute to him. I mean, if Bond, when I think of James Bond, I don't think of Sean Connery, and I don't think of Timothy Dalton, and I don't think of Daniel Craig or Pierce Brosnan. I think of Roger Moore at his best, at his prime, you know, when he just started. He was everything that a gentleman should have been.
And he had that sort of natural cheekiness about him, which made everyone really, like, kind of warm to Bond.
Yeah.
Women just couldn't hate him, and guys were like, "Wow, why can't I be that cool?"
All right, coming up in a little while, we're going to get into a discussion around World Hunger Day. Now, this is important because I thought that we were getting closer to sorting out hunger in certain parts of the planet. I'm going to speak to Tabi Samkwanazi and Onyin Nyaweri about what World Hunger Day is, why it matters, why we should know about it. And I wouldn't waste your time. If it wasn't important to know about it, I promise you we would have skimmed right by this one. But I think it's something that we could all get into. And we'll find out from Onyin Nyaweri, who is from Africa Tikkun. He's a non-government leader. And Tabi Samkwanazi, who will talk about Add Hope and the importance of addressing hunger and malnutrition and the Hope Against Hunger Challenge. You may have heard of some of these things. We'll find out more about them in a little while. And later on, I'm thrilled, Dennis Beckett is going to pop by. Dennis Beckett, I don't know how to – this guy is just one of those people who has an incredible brain. I've always – held him in very high regard. I worked with him once or twice at 702, and we were he was doing a show, and I was producing for him. I, by the way, was the worst producer that ever lived.
You produce for a lot of people despite being terrible.
It was how you learned.
A lot of your stories start like this.
That's how you figure out what you're good at, and you do have to do jobs that you're shitty at in order to figure out what you're good at. And working with Dennis, he was just the easiest person to work. Unlike, you know, John Robbie and people like, because I give John Robbie shit because he was really a tough taskmaster. But Dennis Beckett would arrive and he would say, "What should we talk about today?" And I'd give him a list of three or four things and he'd go, "Perfect." And we'd just do the show.
Hmm.
He's the kind of guy who could talk about almost anything. And he has innumerable awards. He's the owner and editor of Frontline Magazine from 79 to 90. He validated the money prediction, scooped improbable quantities of awards and publications, banning orders. He went to TV with Beckett's Trek, which you may remember on the SABC until they found a better use for their airwaves. And he's done amazing, amazing stuff. He was born in London, and he's got a hell of a life story. So we're going to check in with Dennis Beckett just after 8 o'clock this morning. It'll be one of those that'll be both nostalgic and fascinating. There's not a boring moment in his life. So all of that and more on the way. What else do I have to tell you today? There was something on my... I made notes. I even made notes yesterday. This is how organized I am.
Well, well, well.
Oh, the illegal mining. Can we just talk about that? Because I missed some of it.
Mm-hmm.
Ben started talking about these Zama-Zamas yesterday on the show. He got a message from somebody. And apparently this is way, way bigger, and there's far more going on than we think.
Well, yeah, I mean, Volcom's obviously the big area, right? So I got a message from someone. Again, I don't know if you want to be anonymous or not, but he was saying that this has been going on for quite some time. It's no secret whatsoever. and the fact that people are dying, but it's like it's work. And you get the guys who basically go down and do the hard work, right? These are the zamas. And then you get like
chop up the gold or the diamonds or whatever it is.
But then you get like this mine bosses and then these kingpins basically. So these are the guys that hang around and they recruit sort of young men who are going to go down there. Obviously, with the unemployment in this country being what it is, there's loads of guys that need opportunities and they need work. Mm. So they hang out at these sort of hostels that are very well known in that area. And they recruit these young guys, but they arrive in like these flash cars and they show the life, you know, like that they're living the high life. And these guys go down into the mines and not a lot of them actually always end up returning. So there's various things that are going to happen, right? If there's like a gas leak and they don't know about it, then you're not going to exactly survive that. There's obviously like, you know, mine shafts are going to collapse from time to time, like it's happened recently. Mm. And then there's the violence as well. So it becomes like living in a gang. So if you're not liked by someone or there's a hit out on you because there's disharmony around that, you will just be killed. It's so simple how these things work. And these guys work like hard. But I mean, they're making maybe, I don't know, 10 to 20 grand a month if they're really lucky. And even then, it's like the danger pay on that is just huge.
Well, long hours and you're underground.
And there's no guarantee.
You don't have the equipment or the safety and security of working for a proper mining company. So if something goes wrong, it's the end.
But it's such a well-orchestrated plan by these kingpins and these mine bosses, okay? So security's sorted. So these guys know when they go down there, they've got a boss, right, who basically gives them money for all the ore they bring up. Mm-hmm. Okay, then, so they know that once they're down there, they're secure because these guys have got security at the top. So even if the cops rock up, the cops can't do anything. I mean, these guys are packing major heat. When they're down there, they're being told to excavate areas that no one's going to really want to go to. So even in actual legal functioning mines, there's parts of these mines where the miners don't go to. The Zamazamas will go there because they're desperate. But even the fact that these legal mines, there's guys going down there, and these folks are lurking in the shadows.
And so while the professional, legit miners are busy, these guys who might have been professional once and lost their jobs or whatever, they've got skills. They are just behind them.
But they're down there because a lot of these mines are interlinking, right? I mean, some of these shafts go on for kilometers.
So imagine you're working underground and you can hear other people approaching. You could hear them down the tunnel. And you know that those are not your people.
Exactly. And these guys go away for months on end. And there's certain areas in the mines where they can go to the toilet. So that's been demarcated. But yeah, the migrant worker thing has been quite interesting because if you say from Lesotho, right, where there's nothing going on, these guys are treated like absolute rock stars. So when they come back with the flashy clothes and they come back driving these cool cars, it's all for show and they could all die tomorrow. But they are completely revered amongst their village people. They just think these guys are heroes. So there's this massive appeal to go and live this dangerous life. But jeepers, they're like the mob fatalities and then it's just the violence as well. And it's all been run just like any other mob.
Risk and reward.
There are these kingpins who send innocent, desperate people down to do these horrible jobs. But the thing is, it's like it's absolutely no secret. If you're in the Volcom general area, like we had messages yesterday, people telling us about this. It really is just such a common thing.
Jeez. All right. Well, we're going to find – aren't you going there somewhere? Lucas, you're going somewhere near Volcom, right?
Yeah, I'll be going to Bloemfontein next week.
Okay. Well, it's not exactly Volcom.
But you
pass through Volcom, I think.
Yeah, you can. You can take a detour and pass by Volcom.
Wow.
So I think goodness. I might take some bottle of whiskeys.
See if you can meet some of these guys.
And make money in there. Maybe. Just
look after yourself because these are not exactly the most safe and secure people to be around.
Yeah, maybe they might want to buy some rabbit.
Yeah, fill your boot with rabbits. That's a good idea. All right. We've got a really, really awesome audience here on cliffcentral.com, and we've been thinking of ways to give back. You know, to provide something above and beyond just the show every day. So we threw some ideas together and we've got some awesome monthly prizes that we're going to put into a box. And you need to put hashtag send me the box on your social media. You need to involve one or two other people. You need to go onto Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, tag us in a post showing us a person that you've recently introduced to Cliff Central. Take a photo of them. That's all you need to do. And then tag us along with the hashtag send me the box, and at the end of the month, you could be our grand winner. This will be our first month to hand out the box. We've only got, 6 days, 7 days left of it.
Exactly. We really are getting to that stage. The box is almost full.
What do we got in there?
I can't tell you, Gareth. It's a secret.
But these will be exclusive things that nobody else can get.
Well, exactly.
In other words, it's not some prize you could buy if you had money.
No. It's unique stuff, as we said. It's something that's coming from us. It's the personal touch. And if you win, then you can share on social media and be the envy of everyone else.
So if you want this, and it's very mysterious, but we'll obviously reveal some of the things before the end of the month when we reveal our winner, all you need to do is get onto social media and hashtag sendmethebox. You could be our grand winner. And it's only available to listeners in South Africa because we can't be sending this to Tajikistan, you know. Get those entries in ASAP. You might just win something that that no one else in the world can have. A totally unique box of stuff. We always have interesting things floating around here at cliffcentral.com, including books that I've had, authors that we've had who've written books, interesting little bits and pieces that we pick up around the office. There's some freebies that go around here, and sometimes we think, well, maybe someone else would do better with this than me.
Yeah.
You could win all of that and more. We'll let you know what's in the box after we've decided who our winner is. Hashtag send me the box. Do it on social media now. Got it?
Yep.
Very good.
Very good. Okay. Coming up in a moment or two, World Hunger Day. We'll find out all about that. Never chase a bitch. Chase a fine. Mask on. Yeah. Fuck it. Mask on. Pop a bitch.
Mask on. Yeah. Fuck it. Mask on. This song is trash.
Oh, you don't like it?
It's absolute trash.
All right.
I actually can't even hear what he's saying.
Mask off. It's future. He's saying, mask on. Fuck it. Mask off.
Oh.
Mask on. Fuck it. Mask off. That's what he's saying. All right. It's future. Well, you know, that takes all kinds of songs. And this morning we're going to talk about World Hunger Day. Now, I was under the impression that we had made a huge amount of progress in this respect. Like, there wasn't such a major problem in the world when it comes to hunger, but clearly I was wrong. And this morning, Thabisa Mkwananzi and Onye Nyaweri are in the studio with us this morning. Thabisa is going to tell us all about Add Hope, and Onye Nyaweri is from Africa Tikkun. We've done some work with Africa Tikkun before. Good morning, ladies. What a pleasure to have you both here, and thank you for coming to speak to us. Am I completely wrong that I thought we'd made massive inroads into this whole world hunger situation?
Morning, Gareth.
Morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Nice to meet you, Thabisa.
Lovely to meet you, too. Good. Thank you for having us, right? I wish I could say we have, and we have made progress, but not enough, right? So the stats show us that still 1 in 5 kids go hungry every single day in the country.
In this country?
In this country, 1 in 5 every single day. I think what's more terrifying for us and what makes us more passionate as KFC to really get involved and to stay involved is that the impact of that hunger on children is so much bigger than we thought it was when we started the journey. So we've learned that kids are impacted long term.
Yeah.
So kind of growing up hungry means your world looks different. It impacts you physically, but also emotionally, and your confidence. They're not as confident as other children. They're a little bit more reserved.
You're always in survival mode.
You're always, right? And that's the thing, right? Like, you literally are always in survival mode. The world doesn't look as bright. You don't believe you can do as much. And that's our passion about it, is that we want to get children's tummies full, not just to fill them physically, but to fill their hope. And that's why we called it Add Hope, was it gives them hope for the future, but it also makes and feel like they can do whatever they want to do. And partners like Africa Tikkun allow us to do that in an impactful way.
Well, can we talk about Africa Tikkun for a moment? How did you guys, Onye, get involved in this? And why is hunger a major issue for Africa Tikkun?
Morning, Garrett.
Morning.
Africa Tikkun's focus is really to make sure that young people are developed across their developmental milestones or pipeline from 2 years all the way to 25 years until we see them in a career. And one of the things we do is not just to educate or skill young people, we need to look at them holistically, 360 degrees. Mm-hmm. And one big issue that we've seen in young people and children in particular is hunger. The truth is, as much as there has been a lot of progress in the last 23 years, income inequality has increased. South Africa has the highest Gini coefficient in the world. And because of that income inequality, you have people who have become poorer as opposed to people who have whose circumstances have improved. You have had separated families, fragmented families. You now have child-headed households who cannot take care of their food security needs on their own. You've got families, for example, a young person where the mother had to go get a job in Cape Town, and a 14-year-old son had to take care of younger kids on their own. So we felt that you can't just look at education or skills in isolation of nutrition or food security, which was why it's important to get involved and to partner with Ad Hope KFC.
If you don't have food, everything else, you can't start thinking about education. There's no kid whose stomach is grumbling because he hasn't eaten in 24 hours who's going to be learning in class.
No, there isn't, hey, Gareth. And I think that's the whole thing. So when I spoke to you a little bit earlier about how that worries us even more, right, in the sense that they can't concentrate. So there's actual behavioral and developmental issues that they develop. Their concentration's terribly affected. Like you're saying, if you haven't eaten in 24 hours and you're not sure where it's going to come in the next 48.
If I haven't eaten in about 6 to 8 hours, I start becoming ungovernable.
You become hangry.
Hangry.
Yeah, you really do. Yeah. But also remember, you're not only worried about the 24 that you're in now, you're worried about the next 48 and the next 48, right? So it's this constant flux of physically I'm starving and my body's in starvation mode, but emotionally and mentally I'm thinking about how am I going to get to Sunday and how am I going to get to Monday? How am I going to get to Wednesday? And then you want to come tell me to be the best I can be.
These are not things that a kid should have to deal with. Like part of being a father or mother or whatever kind of guardian you are is to provide the kid with food, for heaven's sake, right?
It really is, right?
I wish it was that simple. In a country where...
But it
is. Yeah.
Who is responsible for this? I mean, I understand that you guys are doing everything you can to try and stem the problem.
Yeah.
Because it's there whether we like it or not. And sometimes we can't do anything about the circumstances. All we can do is try to improve it. But how does this happen?
If I can just explain from our own experiences, the truth is, you know, there's a huge unemployment in many rural and township environments, and many communities, for example, and families are unable to put food on the table for their children, and particularly if there is actually a non-existent parent or guardian in that instance. And therefore, you would find, for example, one of the cases we found was a child at 2 to 6 years old going to the dustbin to look for food because they were very hungry. So the truth is, as much as we want to think it's normal to have parents put food on the table, but in an economy that is growing at less than 1%, and income inequality increasing at the level it is, majority of South Africans are still dependent on grants. Some of them cannot even access grants at all. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they are dependent on some form of value add from either the not-for-profit sector in partnership with the corporate sector. So it's not as simple as that.
And I think it never is, right?
Yeah, it never is. And I think to build on Ani, we've had the fortune of meeting some of the parents too, right? And I think for me, that was a light bulb in my journey with Ad Hope and as KFC was the trauma it brings the parents to not be able to feed your kids is massive. It's hard. It's hard for a mom who's trying to pull things together and who knows she can't feed her kids. And one of the stories the mom told us was she would put a pot on the stove, right? And she would boil water with dishcloths so that the kids think she's cooking until they fall asleep. And so I think that to Ani's point, it's not as simple and black and white as we'd like to think it is. And when you meet some of the parents who kind of go, you've taken this weight off me through Africa Tikkun and some of our other beneficiaries, we have 137 across the country, they kind of go, what you guys are able to do with my children, you co-parent with me. One of the beneficiaries who's now at university came to one of our KFC conferences and she said, you know, I've never had a mom and dad. But through KFC at Hope, I have thousands of moms and dads who make sure I'm fed every day. And that's what we are about. It's kind of going through partnership with our customers, partnership with our beneficiaries. We're able to answer exactly that question and go, you can mom and dad and put a plate on the child's
Can't help everyone. It would be impossible. You know, you're trying to run a business as well. And when it comes to how you decide who you're going to help and who you're not going to help, that's tough too, because you kind of cut some people out of the bargain.
We do. So we currently feed 120,000 children every day through the program, which is a big number, but we want it to be bigger. Our focus, though, is we do it through reputable beneficiaries because it's all about sustainability. Mm. One of the things, so when Ani talks about food security, it's exactly that. The trick is never leave them wondering where the next one's going to come from. So that's a big thing with us in terms of the beneficiaries we partner with is we consistently have been in partnership with most of them. I think we're going on almost 10 years with Africa Tikkun, where they, as an organization, where the core food security partner are secure that they will always be able to provide for the children in the program. So that's how we select, is through beneficiaries. It's through partnering with people who are really on the ground and growing. We've grown up beneficiary numbers. I think we're in 116 last year, and we've added over 20 in a year, and we'll continue to add that way. But you are right, Gareth. It's hard not to get everywhere. And we're looking for ways across the continent of how do we get further faster is really our big thing now, but also doing it sustainably. We don't want to come in and out.
Is there a way that we can see videos of the beneficiaries, that we can kind of get to know the stories of some of these people involved?
That's an exciting thing. So World Hunger Day is coming up on the 28th.
It's on Sunday, right?
Yeah, it's on Sunday. And it's a really amazing opportunity for the whole world to kind of stop and pause and think about what's happening and be sensitized a little bit to what's happening around you. So what we've done is, one of the things we realized was, when people see where the Turenz goes, there's a lot of power in that. Often there are a lot of questions about how does Turenz feed a child. And so we've created this virtual reality experience that literally takes you into the world of Africa Tikkun or SOS Children Villages or any of our other beneficiaries, where you literally see what food does to children. And the most amazing thing is, it's immediate. When you feed a child, the change in their character, the change in their energy is immediate. They go from quiet to laughing and smiling, literally, like in a blink. The plate's gone and it happens. So in those videos, you kind of get to see a little bit of that. You're going to meet some people who've been through some of our beneficiaries and are now at varsity level, and they're going to tell you their stories. And we're hoping that it encourages people to, one, be sensitized, but two, to keep adding hope.
Yeah, if I can also add to that, I think one of the reasons that Ad Hope KFC chose Africa Tikkun is because of the sustainability of our programs. So the fact that we are creating food security and feeding is not the only thing that Africa Tikkun does. Africa Tikkun's focus is really to make them productive citizens in the form that they can access the economy. So Ad Hope have seen beneficiaries that started feeding at primary high school, now in varsity. Some of them graduated in jobs. We've even migrated to a partnership with KFC as a whole, where a number of our beneficiaries who have come through that program are now being facilitated to access learnerships or entry-level jobs with KFC. Families that have been part of food security programs, once they know they can no longer worry about food, they are facilitated through a family support program that then enables them to get jobs into their community. And therefore, in the medium to long term, particularly in Africa Tikkun, we exit them from the program because they are now sustainable.
I mean, what a pleasure to be able to say to someone, you don't need us anymore.
Yeah,
right?
It's the best feeling ever.
Now, where can people go for more info on Ad Hope and World Hunger Day? Is there a place we can go on the web?
Definitely there is. You can go into www.adhope.co.za. You can also see some of the stories on there. You can go into any of our restaurants across the country. The team members will tell you a little bit about Ad Hope. You can add your hope. We'd encourage people, add more than 2 rand. We challenge people this World Hunger Day to decide how many children they'd love to feed. Feed as many as you can and get involved.
R says, big respect to Ad Hope. Question, are you partnering with healthcare or other organizations to educate about general health and birth control? I mean, that's an interesting point.
If I can just
unrelated,
if I can just answer that, Africa Tikkun's, because Africa Tikkun's program is quite holistic and from a health perspective, we're one of the biggest partners of the Department of Health in the Western Cape. So we're not just interested in feeding or educating or scaling.
Sure.
We also look at diarrhea, deworming of children. So there is a huge health aspect. Our foods are prepared in partnership with a dietitian. We do height and weight assessments to measure the difference that the food is actually making in the physical health of the child. So there's a huge, huge health component in it.
Well, let me just say that Ad Hope has raised 39 million rand in 2016, and every cent of that went towards feeding children. Over the last 7 years, Ad Hope has raised over 387 million rand, Mubs. It's phenomenal. And this is people giving, people contributing, people making a difference. Each little bit helps. This is not government funding. This is not people who don't care. This is good South Africans who've all made contributions. The 2 rand donations combined with their own contribution as KFC all add up, and this is making a difference in little ways. And let's not forget, it's not just really, really poor people. I mean, everybody goes to the shops these days. You look at what the cost of like healthy food is. It's damn expensive. You look at the price of something like bread or cheese or fresh produce or meat, it's becoming outrageous for people to feed themselves. And that's ordinary middle-class people, let alone the very poor. You can imagine how it must feel for a mother who has absolutely no income to have to look after her kid or kids. I think it's just one of those things that we have to be very much sensitized to, aware of. And I thought it would be a good idea this morning to have Ad Hope and Africa Tikkun come and explain to us how well they're doing to sort the problem out from their side and how much more help they need. Thank you, ladies.
Thanks for having us,
What a pleasure to meet you. And all the best with World Hunger Day on Sunday. Let's keep fighting this thing until we've beaten it.
We have to. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you as well for having us. I think, just in ending, I'd like to say that 2 rand, it's so little, but it actually does make a difference. Thank you.
What can you buy for 2 rand?
Nada. So you could add hope for 2 rand.
There we go.
Cool.
What an excellent message. Thank you, ladies. Very good. Shape of You. Yeah, love it. Ed Sheeran, nice, huh? Sia was dancing around too. It's got its thing.
I was just thinking, if Ed Sheeran wasn't singing it, it would have sounded very creepy seeing that on a Valentine's Day card. Imagine, I'm in love with the shape of you.
Imagine it was Tom Jones.
Ew.
I'm in love with the shape of you. It'd be very sexy and exciting with all that chest hair.
Ew. It's like, do you love my beer belly as well?
All right, a few messages we've got to get to. Mabali, I'm in love with the shape of you.
Oh.
Can I taste your juice? That's from Woody.
Woody.
No, Woody.
No?
No.
Okay. Oh, by the way, a lot of people agreeing with Mabali about that previous song by Future.
Trash.
Yeah, not liking it. Quentin says, hey, G, Mubs reported on visa-free countries yesterday, and she included Botswana as one of the countries that you don't need a visa to get into.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, Botswana introduced visa regulations. I stand to be corrected, but I think it comes into effect as of June this year. Even people in transit have to pay a fee. Also, I was pretty disappointed that she didn't include Namibia as one of the top 10 visa-free countries for South Africans to visit.
Well, I was reading off a list that was compiled by Cheap Flights SA. So it wasn't, my opinion. It was just reporting back on information that I found.
Pretty awful, though, if Botswana is now going to make us have a visa to visit there. You know what they think of us if they want us to go and, like, we have to pay a visa fee to go to Botswana? Most of their import and export deals are with us. Elson says, next time Pastor Sanyagore speaks to God on the phone, we should put the phone on speaker. I'd like to hear that also.
Ben mentioned the same thing yesterday.
Yeah. Well, if he's going to use technology, use it properly. Come on.
Put on an aux cable and put it through to the church's speaker system.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? Tyrell says, morning, Cliff Central. This is the first time I'm tuning in this month. I started a new job and I moved up to Joburg from Durban. Fuck, it's cold up here. Anyway, I'm finally comfortable enough in my new workplace to start listening again, and I'm excited to be back. I missed you guys.
Oh,
well, welcome back, Tyrell. I wonder what had happened to him. Michelle says, Gareth, if I work a weekend, it means it's 10 days in a row of starting work at 6 a.m., working till 4 p.m. When I'm off, I don't want to see anyone. For the first 2 days, I'm off. And that's from Michelle. We started talking this morning about how you just sometimes have to disconnect from everybody else. By the way, yesterday, Stoffel was in here. We've got Stoffel the hairdresser, and he came in to talk to Ben and Mubs and Sia, and I listened to that interview on podcast on my way into work this morning. We've launched In Stoffel's Chair, which is our first vlog. It's our first video cast, and you can go and see that on cliffcentral.com if you want to see him with Nina Hasty, who's one of his celebrity clients. He talks to Nina Hasty about her alopecia, which I didn't know she had. All her hair fell out once. So she went to go and see him, and he helped her get over that, and they sorted out her problems. Now she's got the sexiest hairstyle in the world. And you can go and look at it all on cliffcentral.com. It's the first of what we hope will be many of our video contributions. So we're not just a podcaster. We're also going to become a videocaster. And you can send us your suggestions, and you can go and take a look at what we've already done there too. Nick says, I heard a crazy stat the other day. If you earn more than $400,000 a year, you are in the top 1% of the richest people in the world.
In the world?
If you earn More than 400,000 a year. All right, let's get our calculators out and figure out what that means on a monthly basis. Cause most of us don't know what to do with this, right?
No. Numbers are very...
We're not good at this stuff.
They're not our strong suit.
No. All right, so let's get out the machines.
Yeah.
Who knows what a 400,000 rand salary in a year means monthly? 400,000, okay.
A lot of threes, Gareth. 12. A lot of threes.
30, it's about 33,000 rand a month. So if you're earning about 33,000 rand a month, you're in the top 1% of the world's rich.
What?
I don't mean to be funny, but I'm some months I barely can make it. So I can only imagine how difficult it is for 90% of the world. It makes me sick. That's from
so Rick. if you earn 33,000 rand, Bernie's got an issue with you.
Yeah, you're in the top 1%.
Yeah.
You're on the top 1 percentile, and the 1% of the 1% is the richest. These are the most dangerous people.
Remember Bernie was going on about the 1%? Well, if all you need to be in the 1% is 400,000 rand, I must tell you, my brother is in England at the moment. He's busy doing some work there. He said, let me read this. This is frightening. I'm going to feel poor.
Oh, this is exactly what we all need.
No, because it is very, very difficult to, with our currency, it means that you're already another 17 factors poorer in a place like England. So 20 million rand will get you this crummy flat. Really, 20 million rand will get you a crummy flat in London.
What are the specs of that flat?
Let me take a look here. It's got a kitchen, open plan, sitting room, dining room, looks like two bedrooms.
Oh,
you look straight into another building, and the building itself is kind of ordinary looking. It doesn't look like much.
So for 20 million rand, you're just 20 basic million rand in the UK.
20 million rand, you're lucky to call yourself middle class in terms of what you can afford. Isn't that depressing?
Yeah, that's very depressing.
So, you know, it's a perverse thing, but we give so much attention to the really, really rich in the media, especially. We constantly see these people who are living this high life. We see celebrities. We see billionaires. That is the tiniest scattering of herbs on the big soup of humanity in terms of the way they live. And we all think, oh, that life is within reach.
It's not.
So what Nick is saying is probably true.
And so I'm not trying to sound like Guru Pitka here, you know, with some sage advice. But if your happiness lies solely in your material positions,
you're
and
in
wealth,
trouble.
Oh, you are.
You're in big trouble.
In the slammer, in the crapper of life.
Yeah.
You can't.
Your life is about to become even worse just because your attitude is wrong and you're thinking about money the whole time. So there's something to think about from
so
Nick.
So bag yourself a blanket with eyes for this winter and find your happiness there.
I just want to see something quickly. If I type in the top 1% of the world's rich, I wonder what comes up.
Yeah, that percent seems very tiny. Not even like top 20% maybe.
Because you sometimes hear these statistics and you're not even sure. Are you in the top 1% of the world? Okay, according to... This is important.
Uh-huh.
So according to the Oxfam, which is, of course, they're a kind of, they're a bit of an interfering bunch of, they tend to put out a lot of nonsense as well. But let's take Oxfam, a leading poverty-fighting organization. 8 men own as much wealth as the 3.6. Now, this I've seen this being debunked, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 10 people survive on less than $2 per day, according to them. And who are the 1%? If you're an American, you don't even have to be close to being uber rich to make the list. According to the Global Rich List, disparities of income of $32,400 a year will allow you to make that top 1%. So that's roughly 30,250 euros a year, 2 million Indian rupees a year, 223,000 Chinese yuan. Mm-hmm. In a year. And if you're an accountant, a registered nurse, or even an elementary school teacher, the average wage for any of these careers falls well within the top 1% worldwide.
Is that possible.
So $32,000 in rands is just over 420,000, and the initial message was 400,000. So
it's about right then.
It's about right.
If you believe in what Oxfam is saying, and this, by the way, comes from Investopedia. The bar to enter the top 1% wouldn't be this low if it weren't for extreme poverty that so much of the globe endures. For example, an adult in India has a median wealth of just $608 in total wealth, according to a report by Credit Suisse, who we know won't lie about this because they're a major financial institution. The average wealth of adults in Africa is even lower at just $411.
This is total wealth. US dollars.
Yeah. Total wealth.
The average African adult.
Yeah. $411. Let me just get out my calculator again. If we divide that now by, call it 13, 14, 15, it's about 27.
No.
Yeah, 27,400. No, I've got
411 multiplied by 14.
See, this is why I need a calculator. Jesus. Okay, 5,754 rand.
Wow. That's a total wealth.
Yeah, and look, I glance at these Oxfam figures with much suspicion. But Credit Suisse saying that the average adult in Africa, 5,000 odd rand is their total wealth. They sell everything now. If you got rid of everything, 5,000?
Well, you know, the more north in Africa you go, the more dire the situation might be. Yeah. But particularly, for example, in South Africa, in our context, how much do people actually own? Not paying off, whatnot.
This is what I was looking for.
I don't know.
Oxfam is absolutely wrong about the global 1% and economic growth plan.
Okay, girl.
Oxfam is touting the report that said the top 1% own 50% of everything and they're calling for a new global deal, blah, blah, blah. Oxfam is wrong. It's debunked. And the evidence that they have has been debunked at Forbes.com, no less than that. So you can go and take a look at that. If you're going to decide public policy on evidence like this, you would be better to simply evacuate the planet and hope for intelligent life to arise at some point. In other words, they're saying that that Oxfam figure is complete nonsense. But even if it was 400,000 rand in a year to get into that top 1%, for this country, it might even be true. Jesus.
Look,
that's not a lot of money.
I imagine that a big factor in us feeling like we can't afford a lot of things is scaling our lives accordingly. You know, and this is something that Vusithemba Gwayo mentioned when he said you mustn't fall for the traps. Mm-hmm. Why are you driving a 2 million rand car when you can't afford it? Mm-hmm. Why are you paying 7,000 rand for rent when you know you can only afford 4,000?
You're making someone else rich.
You know, you've got to make certain cuts in your standard of living to make sure that you can afford things.
Oh, so true. And like, thing is, we know this, but we still do it because well, it's become a way of life.
Yes, yes. That is a huge factor in us not being able to afford things.
It's like this financial imprisonment that we force upon ourselves.
Yeah.
But when you start hearing terms like that, it starts to sink in a little bit more because that's what it really is, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Like, especially in this country with cars. I mean, we're a junk country, right?
Yeah.
You drive around today, look around you.
Oh, it doesn't look like a junk country.
How junk are the cars?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We're signing ourselves away for 20 years, for 2 years, for 5 years, whatever the case is.
Like human trafficking ourselves towards like luxury items.
Oh, Lord.
Gareth, your Bernie impression is way better than your Trump one. Thank you, Carl. Setting me right there. Jared saying on the outskirts of London, you'd be lucky to find a place like you just described. Please don't mention my name. I earn 790,000 per year and I feel really poor. That's from one of – he doesn't want me to mention his name. I pay 18,000 a month for my one-bedroom flat in London, says Jared. That's insane, right?
Completely.
How many people do you share with?
Well, that's the other question. You have to shack up with a whole bunch of strangers. I'd rather be a Zama-Zama. It sounds like they've got a better life.
In London, you Zama-Zamaing in open daylight.
Zama-Zamas are the way to go. In terms of life?
Wow. And then you get a dick like Brian Molefe. Huh? And he's being paid way more than he should be to live a life he shouldn't be living.
He especially from the lying that anything. He tells.
Such a liar.
Yeah, but just most of these MPs, they're what, on like 200,000 rand a month?
Yeah. It's unreal.
Mm. 200,000 rand a month.
What a mess.
2.4 million rand a year to do, let's be honest, what?
Well, since we are sort of talking about money, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the richest people in the world, Bill Gates, has just reviewed a certain book.
What's
and
that?
It just so happens to be Trevor Noah's. I think this is major.
Really?
We should just have a weekly Trevor Noah segment because he's always
Bill
doing
Gates
something.
Bill Gates has been reading Trevor Noah and he gave a review?
On times.com, Nuchal.
Yes, sis.
So you know you've made it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just done now. This is what Bill had to say about Trevor Noah's book, Born a Crime. He says, much of Noah's story of growing up in South Africa is tragic. Yet in Noah's hands, these moving stories are told in a way that will often leave you laughing. His skill for comedy is clearly inherited from his mother. Bill also goes on to call Trevor's mother hero. And this basically just like cements Trevor's status as if he needed any more cementing in
That's
his
great.
Career. This
I love
is awesome.
That.
Yeah.
I liked his tweet. Trevor went onto Twitter and he said, Bill Gates just reviewed my book. Started from Windows 3.1, now we're here.
And then, what's even
wow.
a step further than that, Anele then went to say, technically, Bill Gates knows me. Because
Anele,
7 degrees of
review,
separation. Yeah. Yeah.
Wrote a review on Trevor's book, and if you go into the back cover, Anele's daughter is on there. And if Bill Gates read that, he of course read Anele's name. So you know,
yes, of course,
just totally in the same circle.
That makes perfect sense.
Well, Bill Gates also knows me because I live in South Africa. And Trevor Noah referenced.
South yeah,
Africa.
He mentioned South Africa, so we're all involved, right?
Yeah, sure.
You stupid bastard.
Sure. Yeah, it's nice being Trevor Noah, huh?
It's only my wife and I, says Jared, to tell us about his flat in London.
All right.
Not doing the house share ever again, but a lot of South Africans who do live in London live like that.
You have to. There's no other way.
Yeah. Migs says, here's our little question of the day from Migs.
Oh, is it dark again?
Oh, it was violent yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Due to Ben's request, here is a non-morbid but very fantasy-based question that may interest you. Ben has been turned into a Muppet by Jane, but he can choose which Muppet. Are you familiar with the Muppets, Ben?
Sure, I'm also familiar with Jane's violence, yeah.
Right, so you've got to choose,
don't miss that.
You choose which Muppet you will be. The side effect of this, if the Muppet has a partner, Daniela will also be transformed into a Muppet. Your options are A, Animal.
Mm-hmm.
Animal. Animal. Fozzie. Is it Fonzie or Fozzie Bear? Fozzie Bear. Floyd Pepper, I don't know who that is. And Janice, obviously, is his girlfriend. Kermit and Miss Piggy. The Swedish Chef. I hope you enjoy this. I'll go back to singular, short questions as before. Which one is it going to be, Ben? Animal, Fozzie Bear, Floyd Pepper, Kermit. Who do you choose?
Probably Fozzie Bear. He seems cool and cute, and people seem to like him.
Isn't he kind of grumpy sometimes?
Have you met Ben?
Yeah, Fozzie Bear.
Jeepers, yeah? You really are on your phone a lot, huh?
No, Fozzie Bear seems pretty...
Oh, no, Fozzie
Bear's there. Cool.
Yes,
exactly.
Okay. I just Googled him. No, he's fine.
Okay, let me see if we can remind everybody. Fozzie Bear's... Fozzie Bear.
Ba-dum.
He's the big orange...
Manamana!
That's Fuzzy Bear. Fascinating. That's all that Ben would do.
That looks a bit homeless.
Me up.
Yeah.
He wears a tie.
Well,
it's kind of a tie.
It's a scarf.
He wears it like Donald Trump wears a tie, which is down in the middle of his crotch.
He has a nice hat. I like his hat.
All right.
I'd wear a hat like that if that fitted me.
Fozzie Bear, there it is. Ben's decision. Migs, I hope that helps you with your question.
I'm so glad.
For this morning. Alrighty.
Yesterday, Migs had me like try to choose my death. It was getting a bit too dark.
It's very hectic.
I know.
All grisly deaths, but he chose my buddy Malloy to murder him with a car.
Yeah.
It was going to be quick.
Well, because she wouldn't even know. She'd just go over his body. And she'd go, oh my God, I must have hit a rock. She wouldn't even stop to look. I know Mavs. She'd just move on.
You know me so well.
she'd be like, I don't have time. Whatever that was, it's in the past. I don't need to worry about this now, right? I got other things to worry about. Get out of here. By the way, where's Sia?
Oh, right. when she rocks up on Monday.
Guys, have you seen Sia? No, he said he was going out to meet you, and he walked into the road.
Oh.
I wonder what could have happened to him.
Yay! Love the song.
I thought you were going, yay, my buddy drove over me.
No.
Here's Lady Gaga. It's 10 after 8.
I'll address you because you're tired.
Got an emergency call? Wait, hang on. Let's stop this. Oh. It's for Ben. It's an emergency call for Ben on
the
line.
This is breaking news.
No, these make me nervous.
You should be nervous. Is it on the phone or on the Skype? Phone. All right. Hey, go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Babe.
Jane Malaji.
Oh my God. How can you put me on air, guys? Oh my God.
Hi, Jane. How are you, Mum Jane?
Oh my God. I know that I'm on air.
How's your baby?
Oh my God. So hard, like, I didn't sleep the whole night.
Yeah, motherhood, hey, it's really, it's great, isn't it wonderful?
Who do you miss the most, Jane? Who do you miss the most from here?
I miss you too, guys. How are you, guys?
You miss us all.
All of you, guys. You know, Ben, I don't think I'll fight with you ever. I miss you. I miss to fight with you.
I miss you too, Jane.
Well, oh my God, where's Papa G?
When are you coming back?
I'll come to show you, baby. I don't know when, but I'll tell you when I come.
Hey, all those supplies that we gave you—the nappies and the creams and all that stuff—have you run out yet, or is it still going strong?
I did run out. Oh, Papa G, it's you. Papa G, I miss you. How are you?
You must come and see us soon. We want to see the baby and kind of figure out what you've been up to.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you so much, all guys. Right, you know, guys, I didn't sleep the whole night. The baby was crying the whole night. I just want to, you know what, I was just saying, let me sleep now. And when you guys told me, I was like, oh my God.
Well, we love you lots.
Thank you.
And keep well, and we'll see you soon, all right?
Thank you so much. For
thanks,
my
Jane.
I miss you.
Bye, Austin.
Let's try this Lady Gaga again for Sia. He loves this song. All right, 13 after 8. CliffCentral.com.
I'll address you cause you're tired. Cover you as you desire. When you fall asleep inside my arms.
CliffCentral.com.